Welcome, everyone. This is Kevin Gianni from RenegadeHealth.com, and today I would like to welcome you to a very special interview. This is actually an interview that is outside of our regular interview series, and I wanted to get this guest on because I am just so excited about what he's doing. I love his book, and I've been applying some of the principles that he outlines in his book, and I've just been really excited about it, and I'm just absolutely thrilled to have him on. I actually met our guest today for the first time at the New Frontiers in Sedona, Arizona. I have to admit, I saw him. He was at the salad bar, and I looked at him. I had seen his picture online before, and it was one of those things where you look twice, and you're like, is that person? And so I kind of gathered up some of my energy, and I went up to him and introduced myself to him. I was a little bit nervous, I have to admit. Usually I don't get that nervous, but for some reason I was nervous because I know that what he's done has been just absolutely incredible. So I was a little bit nervous, and we sat down and talked very briefly because Anne Marie was ringing up some of the stuff at the grocery store, and I had to leave. But I was really excited to connect with our guests and really, have the opportunity now to be able to interview him. It's just incredible. So I want to welcome Steve Pavlina. Sometimes I mess up that last name. Pavlina, correct?
Pavlina, yep, that's it.
Pavlina is widely recognized as one of the most successful personal development bloggers on the Internet, and he attracts more than 2 million monthly readers to his website, stevepavlina.com. That's P-A-V-L-I-N-A.com. He's written more than 700 articles and recorded as many audio programs on a broad range of self-help topics, including productivity, relationships, and spirituality. Steve has been quoted as an expert by the New York Times, USA Today, U.S. News and World Report, the Los Angeles Daily News, Self Magazine, and The Guardian, and he has just recently released, probably a couple months ago, the book Personal Development for Smart People. And I love the title, I love the book, and we're going to be talking about that, as well as the raw food diet, because little did some people know, and I found out recently, that Steve actually is a raw foodist. So let's welcome Steve, and I want to say, hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Kevin. It's great to be here with you and your listeners.
Well, let's start very briefly, and why don't you explain kind of your story? It's a pretty compelling story. I've read it in the book, but I think it would be nice for everyone to know kind of where you came from and then how you were able to get to a place where you've been quoted in these great newspapers, you have a great book here, and what kind of resolve that took.
Well, for many years I was running a computer game development business, and it was a dream of mine in my 20s, and it was something that I just, I loved to do. I loved computer games when I was growing up, and I decided to start a business right out of college, and I ran that business for 10 years. But as I was running that business, I always had this passion on the side for personal development, personal growth. It was always something I was very enthusiastic about, but it was always a hobby on the side. It was never a full-time business or anything like that. I never made any money from it. But what I started doing with my computer games business is I began writing articles on the side just to help out other game developers. And over time, those articles started becoming more and more popular than the computer games I was selling. So I thought that was kind of funny. This was right around late 1990s, early 2000s, when the Internet really started taking off and search engines really started growing bigger and bigger. And people were finding my articles through search engines. And even though the articles were written to help other game developers, I started writing articles with a more motivational slant and more about productivity and motivation. And those articles started expanding beyond the game developer community. And that's when I kind of got the idea that, hey, maybe I should, turn this hobby on the side into a full-time business, because by this point I was in my 30s and I was losing interest in continuing to develop computer games for the rest of my life. And I thought, hey, wouldn't it be great to start a personal development website? And so that's when I launched stevepavlina.com in 2004, and it really just started taking off pretty quickly. I didn't know how to make money with it from the beginning, and in the whole first 6 months I only made $167 from the website. So, and I was working on it almost full time, so it was like 17 cents an hour. But I loved it so much, I just kept persisting, and I kept going with it. And eventually that led to a book deal with Hay House, and I started doing podcasts, over time, and the web traffic just grew and grew and grew, and I just kept, writing articles, like every week another two or three articles usually. And it's been an amazing journey, and now I'm doing professional speaking also related to this. So, I'm already working on a proposal for my second book now. So that's been just a a wonderful journey on this path of personal growth. I just love being able to help other people on their path of growth and being able to generate income from it and make a living from it, and in ways I just never could have imagined when I was when I was first growing up. I never thought I would end up doing this kind of work.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you worked really hard at it, and you had all this. I'm sure it was a struggle at times when you're just, making $100 over a period of 6 months. It's like, man, what am I doing? Did you think that it would come to this?
It might sound a little strange to say this, but I actually did think it would eventually become very successful.
Okay.
But I wasn't really doing it for financial success. I just kind of put out the intention to the universe that if I'm really meant to do this kind of work, then show me a way to make a living from this full time so I don't have to run my games business. And I was running my games business on the side, just kind of in low gear, because it was an internet business. It was really easy to maintain on maybe like 5 hours a week. I could keep it going and keep generating income from it. But I really wanted to be able to let that go, and so I shut the games business down completely in 2006, because by that point I was making plenty of money from my personal development website.
Right.
So I really did hold that intention that I just, I really wanted to be doing this kind of work. I was so passionate about it. It was something I really loved to do. And I said, I basically just said to the universe, I don't know how I'm going to make a living from this. Just show it to me. Bring it to me. make it happen. And it was like I just decided it was what I wanted to do, and that I didn't worry about where the money was going to come from. I just knew somehow it was going to work out.
It's a great mindset, and I'm sure a lot of people are listening and saying, all right, well, Steve, that worked for you, but what about me? How can someone apply? How does someone get to that type of mindset? What does it take?
Well, I think there's four questions we need to ask ourselves if we want to get to this point where we're doing what we love to do and we're able to generate, some kind of sustainable income from it so we can maintain it. I mean, the point of generating income for me is not to try to get rich from it. It's to be able to maintain it long term so I can keep doing what I love without having to worry about, what am I going to do on the side to pay my bills.
Right.
So the way I think about it is with the simple model of body, mind, heart, and spirit. So I ask myself four questions, and the body question is how do I meet my physical needs, or what do I need to do, and then the mind question is what can I do, what are my skills, what are my abilities, what am I capable of, and the heart question is what do I want to do, what would I love to do, what am I passionate about, and that spirit question is what should I do, what's my purpose here, what can I contribute. So when you look at this model of body, mind, heart, and spirit, and you try to ask yourself, how could I get to the point where all four of those things are pointing me in the same direction, where they're all in balance? So I'm doing something that's meeting my physical needs, generating enough income to pay all my bills and feed myself, feed my family, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing something that I'm good at, so it's I can provide some real value with it. I'm doing something I enjoy doing, so I want to maintain it. I want to keep doing it. I don't have to push myself. It's not a drudgery what I'm doing. And I'm making a contribution, so I'm actually having a positive impact on other people. And the quadrant I realized to start in is the heart one, is that you have to start with what you love to do. Because if you start with what you love to do and you just keep doing it, you'll do it because you want to. Even if you have to carve out just a few hours a week because that's all you can afford, if you just keep doing what you love to do, eventually then you get the mind quadrant going because you start getting good at it. So you start developing skill at it. If you just keep doing anything long enough, you eventually learn a lot about it and you start getting good at it. And with that skill comes the ability to make a contribution. Now you're starting to provide some value for other people, and if you can contribute something of value, then you can generate income from it and meet your needs. So it's kind of this cascading effect that all starts from just begin with what you love to do and just throw yourself into it and not worry so much about how you're going to make money. Focus first on getting good at it. And then when you get good at it, focus on being able to use your skill to create a contribution, to provide some value for other people. And when you can create some kind of contribution, then you can focus from there on how to monetize that, how to generate income so you have this fair, ongoing exchange where you're giving your value to other people and you're getting value in return. And then you have this ongoing cycle that's can sustain you indefinitely. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And some people know what really makes them tick. So some people really know what they're passionate about. But why do some people fail and some people succeed? And regardless of what the topic is, I mean, because you know, mainly we talk about health here, but I mean, why do some people fail when some people succeed and you feel like they have the same purpose and the same mission?
I think a lot of people, they try to jump the gun. They try to go from this point of like, I'm passionate about something, therefore I'm going to go out and immediately try to generate income from it. Well, you know, if I took that approach, I would look at it and go, okay, I've been passionate about personal development since I was like 19 years old.
Right.
And, you know, I started my self-help business in my early 30s. I had a lot of experience in it. But even the first 6 months, I only made $167. That's an utter failure. But the, you know, and a lot of people will look at that and go, oh, well, you can't succeed at this. It's, you know, it's you lost it. You failed. You give it up. You know, try something else. Go get a job. But the... What they're doing is they're jumping the gun. They're trying to jump from that heart quadrant, you know, to the physical body quadrant. They're just like jumping straight ahead to try to meet their needs from doing something they love. That's not how it works. They're skipping all these intermediate steps, and they have to go through that process of do what you love, so you can get good at it, you're really good at it, and then so you can provide value with it, and then you know use the value you're able to provide to other people to generate income. So many people, they'll jump into something they're passionate about, but they're really not that good at it, and so they can't provide any value to other people. Like, you're really passionate about music, great, but, you know, in the public opinion, your music stinks maybe, and so nobody's going to listen to it. Nobody wants to hear it because you're not really producing anything that's moving them, that's stirring their souls. You're not really contributing because you just haven't developed your skills to be able to do that yet. So, you know, I say it's great to do what you love, but focus first on getting really, really good at it so you can provide a lot of value to other people. And then even if you just give that value away for free, okay, if that's how you can start generating income. I mean, that's how I did it with my website. I didn't know if my articles were going to be that great, if they were going to really move people, but I just sat down and kept writing. And I really just persisted with it. You know, on my website right now, there's probably about 20 books worth of free articles. If it were to be placed into books, I mean, it would be thousands of pages. And that's all just free content I was writing so I could get good at writing, so I could get good at figuring out how to make a difference in people's lives. And I didn't charge any money for it, but I was able to make money from putting advertising on the site, from doing joint venture promotions, from doing affiliate deals, things like that. And only now am I actually generating income directly from my work by having a book out.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, I mean, years of that. So I think you know, big problem is people don't take a very long-term perspective. They ask questions like, how can I generate money doing what I love right now? Because they have this sense of urgency. And, you know, I mean, you have to sort of get past that and realize that, you know, think 5 years ahead, think 10 years ahead. You know, focus on building your skills first. Focus on making a contribution. If you're giving away your content for free on the Internet and nobody's coming, nobody wants to look at it, well, you know, maybe it's not that you need more marketing. Maybe it's that your content's just not very good.
That's a great point. I want to kind of spin this a little bit towards health, because I can kind of picture like how someone maybe with a health challenge can use this type of approach, but I haven't like fully nailed it down. So maybe you can kind of explain like someone who has a health challenge but they can't seem to get it taken care of, and it, say it's something innocuous, nothing that's like a dangerous thing, and everyone knows that we're not medical doctors or anything like this. But you know, how can someone use a self-improvement approach to their own health? And maybe you can even use your example with raw food.
Sure. Well, this will get into some of the principles from my book. The
okay,
three
cool.
core principles in the book are truth, love, and power. And the whole book is really centered just around these three words: truth, love, and power. So what the book proposes is a model of personal development where our goal is to bring ourselves into greater and greater alignment with these three principles, to align ourselves with truth, to align ourselves with love, and to align ourselves with power. Now, my experience is that growth is not really a linear process in the sense that you can't say, here's a step-by-step process that everyone can use to improve their situation, because everyone's at a different starting point. And everyone has a different end goal, and the path they're going to take together to get there, while for each person might be sort of a linear process, in a general sense, it's very different for each individual. So the first step is to kind of diagnose where you are. It's like, are you out of alignment with truth? Are you out of alignment with love? Or are you out of alignment with power? Now to give like a personal example, when I wanted to become a raw foodist, the first step, you know, was to see if I could align myself with truth. So what I did there is I basically educated myself. I learned everything I could learn about the raw food diet. Now, when I first attempt at the raw food diet, I actually made it, I think it was in 1998, mm-hmm. and I only lasted 3 days because, and I was a cooked food vegan for a while before that. And the reason I only lasted 3 days is that I just didn't have any education about it. I didn't know what I was doing. I only ate salads, and I think I was getting maybe like 500 calories a day. So by the end of the third day, I was just starving, and I just had to have a veggie burger. So I said, forget this. You know, you'd have to be eating all day long to be a raw foodist. And it's just because I was totally ignorant. I was out of alignment with truth. I didn't know how other raw foodists actually did this. I didn't know how to succeed. So then I started reading all kinds of books about it. And then what I did is I was able to do, this is probably around 2002, 2003, I did a 30-day trial, and I made it the whole 30 days because now I had some books about it and a couple of raw food cookbooks. So I was like, oh, this is how the people eat. This is how they get enough calories. You know, this is how you get 2,000 calories a day instead of 500 calories. And so that was that element of power. I was taking action. I decided I didn't really know what, you know, whether this would be the right diet for me, but I just dove in and took action. And so action is another step. You have to dive in and try something. You have to learn from personal experience. If you have a health challenge, you have to just experiment and try things to be your own authority and find out what works for you, because what works for you may not be the same as what works for everyone else. And that third principle, that was the real key for me, the principle of love. This is basically the idea of if you want to improve in any area of your life, you have to really immerse yourself in that field and immerse yourself and surround yourself with other people who are already succeeding in what you want to do. So whenever I tried to do the raw food diet, I only lasted 30, maybe 45 days at most, and I always went back to cooked food because I had the truth, I had the knowledge of what I needed to do, and I had the power, I had the self-discipline to keep going for a while, but eventually it got to be just too much for me because I was missing that social support. I never had the love aspect going, and I always went back to cooked food because, well, I was surrounded by other cooked food eaters. So it was always pulling me back to cooked food. And it was only when earlier this year that I reached out to the raw food community and started making friends who were raw foodists themselves. And when I made enough friends in the raw food community, then I finally had that social support, and I was finally able to switch over and go 100% raw and not feel a need to go back to cooked food. So I've been 100% raw for several months. In fact, right now I'm in the middle of doing a juice feast. So that was kind of an amazing process, being able to use these three principles to make that transition to 100% raw.
And now the juice feast, did you weigh it against these three principles again, or was this just an extension of what you already done?
No, actually I did, because I thought, wow, 92-day juice feast. See, a year ago was when I first learned about juice feasting, and I thought, that's just insane. I mean, you'd have to be crazy to do that kind of thing. And it's almost unreal that a year later I'm actually doing one. I'm on day 18 right now of a 92-day juice feast. And I feel like I can make it the whole 92 days. And I really had to enlist that social support. I talked to David Reinishek on the phone about it, and I talked to Angela Stokes via email a lot. And there's a lot of people supporting me doing this process who have done juice feasts before. I've talked to at least, I think, five people who've already done 92-day juice feasts. And it's been really helpful that they're monitoring what I'm doing and encouraging me along the way. Because I assure you, if I didn't have that social support, I would have given up by this point.
Right.
There's been some really rough days, and I don't think I would have made it. And it's it's not easy. at least in the beginning. I suspect it'll get easier as I go along. But I've heard the first 30 days are the hardest, and I'm still in those first 30 days. And it's there's some days where it's been pretty rough with the emotional detox, and I have to go through.
Now, some people, you had mentioned taking action. And I'm really big into empowering people to take action. Some people won't do it. And I guess my question is, why do you think they won't? And what can anyone kind of spur them to take action, or is it something that has to come internally?
You can help to nudge people in the right direction, but ultimately it is a personal decision. So you can't really force people to do something that they're going to resist. However, truth, love, and power all are mutually supportive of each other. So it's not truth or love or power. They're not in conflict. Ideally, if your power is weak, it could be because your truth and love side is weak also. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways to help motivate somebody to take action is to get them into an environment with other people that are taking action. You know, I find that I don't need as much self-discipline to do what I'm doing when I'm surrounded by other people who are already doing it. Another thing is you can push on the truth side a little bit more. Sometimes people won't take action because they really don't know the consequences of not taking action. They don't understand the big picture. They don't have the education, the background. This is especially true with something like dietary change. So if you can get the person to read a bunch of books, just educate them about it, and they can learn for themselves. Often that's what people need to motivate them to take action.
That's a great point. In your book, you mentioned that you've read a lot of self-development stuff, a lot of self-help stuff, and some of it was very incongruent. So you really tried to break down to the very basics of what it was. Tell me about that process. Like, how did you go? Did you go through a lot of different things and stuff that you'd seen and said, well, this doesn't work because it's not the basic need or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there were some things in self-help. I mean, I've read at least 1,000 books over the past maybe 15 years. And, as I was going through it, I thought every once in a while I would come across some technique. I thought that was just really golden. Like, that was a really good book. An example is I really liked Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I thought that was really interesting. That was really good. And, other times I'd read a book and I go, well, there's some aspects of it that sound right to me, but something about this just doesn't seem correct to me. There was a field I studied for a while about building rapport, about how when you meet somebody new, you do these matching and mirroring techniques to try to make the person feel comfortable with you, you're mirroring their body language and things like that. And that always felt a little fake and phony to me, a little bit manipulative, especially since, you're encouraged to do this without the other person's knowledge. So something about that just felt intuitively wrong to me. So I kind of reviewed all these different books I went through and the different ideas that I'd been exposed to, and I thought, which of these feel intuitively correct to me and which don't? And that's where I started noticing a pattern, that I just felt intuitively wrong about anything that seemed dishonest and which was out of alignment with the principle of truth. I felt intuitively wrong with anything that made me feel disconnected from other people rather than more connected. Like, if I had to do anything that was controlling of other people rather than, inspiring or motivating them, that just felt wrong to me. And if I had to do anything where it felt like I was settling for less than my potential, then something that felt disempowering to me, you should just accept a negative situation rather than doing something about it, that didn't feel right to me either. So I thought, well, there are a lot of aspects of truth in all these different books, all these different ideas I've been exposed to. But I felt like there were these core principles of truth that would that could be somewhere buried beneath the surface, that if I could unearth them, then I could sort of form this underlying framework upon which all the other personal growth principles that I'd learned could be fit into.
Gotcha. And you mentioned accepting the negative. I think a lot of people do that, accepting that this is just how it is. What can you say to someone who just was in a situation like that, or has been in a situation like that? How can you explain the possibility that there's more?
Well, I mean, I should probably correct that a little bit. Accepting the negative is okay in the sense that you acknowledge the truth of your situation. You don't want to go into a state of denial, denying what you're getting. I mean, if you're in a negative situation, go ahead and acknowledge that. But what you don't want to do is put yourself in a situation of tolerating it. In other words, pretending that it's okay, pretending that you like it. So when I find myself in a situation like that, usually the problem is that if I acknowledge the truth that I don't like the situation I'm in, I might also feel too weak to change it. Like, I just don't have the power to do anything about it. But the key is, if you can't align yourself with power by getting yourself to take action, don't pull yourself out of alignment with truth and make it even worse. So what I do in those situations is I say to myself, well, okay, I accept the truth that I'm in a situation I don't want to be in right now, but at this point I lack the strength to change. This is, it's too heavy a weight for me to lift. So I acknowledge this 300-pound weight in front of me, but I can't lift it, I can't budge it, I can't move it. But I also, at the same time, put out this intention that I want to be able to lift it, I want to be able to change it, I want to be able to move it. And by focusing on that intention, I go through a process basically of building the strength to change. I ask myself, you know, okay, maybe I'm not strong enough right now, but how could I get strong enough to be able to change this? How could I be able to move this weight in front of me? And then that's where you have to really go through a process of self-development, a process of training. You see a heavy weight in front of you, and maybe you're not strong enough to lift it or change it right now. But over a period of time, if you really devote yourself to becoming strong enough to change it, you can do that. I mean, as a simple example, let's say I wanted to get into professional speaking, but I just think, oh, gosh, I hate speaking. It makes me nervous. I don't want to do it. I would never, you know, I could never imagine getting up on a stage in front of hundreds of people and giving a speech. It would terrify me. But I thought, okay, that's a weight I want to eventually be able to lift, though, so how could I do it? So I went through a process of joining Toastmasters International, training myself up. I gave small speeches in front of audiences of like 10 people, you know, a five-minute speech, and built up from there over a period of years to eventually, you know, the point I was doing an all-day workshop and feeling confident and feeling great about doing that. So even though the weight was too heavy for me to lift at the time, I knew that I could train myself up to be able to lift it. And that's the same thing with health changes. You can't necessarily make all the changes you want overnight, but you can train yourself up to be able to become that kind of person who can do that.
That's a great point. We're about half hour into the call. I just wanted to mention to everyone that you can get more information about Steve at www.stevepavlina.com. That's P-A-V as in Victor, L-I-N-A.com, stevepavlina.com. And you can check out his book there, Personal Development for Smart People, The Conscious Pursuit of Personal Growth. So, Steve, I do want to ask you about the title here, Personal Development for Smart People. I mean, can I be semi-smart, or like what? I'm sure you get this all the time. Why smart people? What's the deal?
Well, part of the reason I used that title is that it was a tagline I was using on my website for a few years. So that sort of connects with the branding of my website.
Right.
But basically, I always liked that. I tried different phrases for catchphrases on my website. And I just like the Personal Development for Smart People approach because it was memorable, it got people's attention, and most people think they are smart, and so that's fine. And it's not that it's trying to be there as a qualifier, like are you smart or are you not smart. It's more of that trying to point out that this book has an intelligent approach to personal growth. It's not like an idiot's approach or a dummy's approach. It's not really meant to be just like scratching the surface. It's meant to go very deep.
Yeah, and it does. And the first section of it is the principles, and there's some intelligence and courage and authority, which we don't have time to cover all of these. But the second part of it is my favorite part because it's application, and I love application of things. And most people are scared of this part. And you kind of break it down into habits, career, money, health, relationships, and spirituality. Let's kind of go through some of these here. And how can you identify poor habits, like particularly in health? You know, what are some of the ways that you can really kind of put a halt to these things? Because I think people are kind of controlled by these things over and over and over again, and they can't really get out of that spiral.
Well, my favorite approach is to use a 30-day trial to start changing your habits, because changing habits can be very difficult if you look at it from the perspective of, you know, I want to make this a permanent change and that I want to get rid of this habit for the rest of my life. And then you have this instant feeling of deprivation. You think, oh, my gosh, how could I do this for the rest of my life? Like when I thought about going raw, 100% raw, for the rest of my life, it was daunting. I thought, oh, never to have these cooked food items that I love again. It was too much. But I thought, well, I could do it for 30 days. And by doing a 30-day trial, what happens is you eliminate that barrier that resists the permanent change. You get past that part of yourself that you know feels fear and trepidation about making the change forever. And when you just dive in and start doing it, it doesn't take as much discipline to get through a 30-day trial of something because you know it's going to end. And when you get to the end though of those 30 days, now the habit's actually already established and you're a different person than you were on day one. So now you can look back and you see 30 days of success behind you. And at that point, you might make the decision to continue. And there have been many times where I've done habits like that where I've looked back and I said, you know what, I'm not going to continue. I'm going to go back to the way it was. This is too hard. But many times I've done these 30-day trials, I decided to stick with it. And Like when I went vegetarian, when I went vegan, I did those as 30-day trials originally, and they just stuck the first time I did it, and I never went back. But I never set out the goal of making it a permanent lifelong change. I just wanted to see what it was like.
Hmm.
And so, the nice thing about doing a 30-day trial is it gives you better alignment with truth because now you know what it's really like. It gives you better alignment with power because now you're disciplining yourself for a short period of time just to get past that initial hump. And also, if you can bring in some of that love aspect, you'll be able to sustain it long term, which means to connect with other people who are already succeeding in this area too. Like if you go vegetarian and hang out with other vegetarians, make vegetarians as friends, go to vegetarian potlucks, read books about vegetarianism, you know, really immerse yourself in that.
Hmm. Let's move on to career. What if you don't like your job? What are your options?
Well, you can tolerate it, which puts you out of, that puts you basically out of alignment with love because now you're doing something you don't like. You're connecting with what you don't want rather than what you do want. And the principle of love says don't connect with what you don't want. You know, you need to connect with what you do want. You're also disempowering yourself because that's going to grate on you after a while. And you're very likely to turn your back on truth if you tolerate it because what will happen is you'll succumb to a state of denial. You'll just get sucked into it, and you'll just say, well, this is how things are going to be, so I better learn to like it, even though you don't like it. So you try to convince yourself it's okay, that you're on the right path, even though you know you're not. Another option is to, of course, quit or try to shift careers. For many people, it's not that practical to quit immediately overnight because they still have to meet their needs. However, what they can do is carve out some time on the side and try to find a job, especially that doesn't chew up too much time, where they can get a high enough hourly rate to meet their needs with the skills that they have, and then develop new skills on the side so they can start contributing in new ways. Like when I was trying to build up my games business, and I wasn't able to generate enough income from it, I did a little bit of tutoring in C++ programming on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So since that was a skill I had already developed, I could get a high enough hourly rate from that to be able to pay most of my bills, even though I wasn't able to get much work from it. So I only had a few students I was teaching, but that was enough that if I did a little bit of that, it was and a little bit of web consulting too, you know, kind of mixing things up there, it allowed me to generate enough income to live really cheaply. And I stripped my income, I stripped my expenses down to the bone so I could afford to do this. So I canceled all my magazine subscriptions. I didn't have a newspaper subscription. I didn't have cable TV. I lived in moved to a really cheap apartment. And, I mean, my wife and I used to have debates about whether we could afford Taco Bell for dinner.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, really, really cheap at the time. Just so I could afford to spend all my time developing a computer game. So I didn't have to put too much time into maintaining my standard of living because it was really cheap. But I also knew, okay, you know, we're not really living high on the hog here, but we were living off, pretty low income. But in fact, we didn't even have to pay taxes. We were getting money back from the government because we were making so little. So we were getting an earned income credit on what we were making too. So, we were living really cheaply, but we knew it would be temporary because I was able to pour all my time and attention into creating a computer game. And eventually that game became pretty successful, and I was able to quit doing the consulting on the side and quit doing the tutoring, which I didn't really enjoy. And I didn't really enjoy doing that kind of work. But I was able to manage doing it, and I was honest with myself. I was saying, okay, I don't really want to keep doing this forever, and I'm doing it just to generate income, but it is providing some value for other people, so that's great. I didn't have to fight with myself and resist it. But I also saw that light at the end of the tunnel because I was pouring all my energy into what I was passionate about and getting good at it enough that I could create a computer game that I could sell.
Right. And it seems like it took a little bit of creativity. What about the person who's out there saying, well, I'm not creative. You know, I don't have the ability to tutor people in C++ or anything like this. You know, what's kind of the approach that someone can take in order to open their mind up to different possibilities like that?
Geez, well, we all have different skills. It's just a matter of what you direct your attention to. It's not that difficult to do something of value for somebody. I mean, you can flip burgers for a living if you need to generate some money, and people have done that. People have you know, people have built up businesses on the side while they were working at minimum wage jobs. I had a minimum wage job when I was in college, working for $6 an hour, just so you know I could make a little extra money on the side to meet my needs. And you can, you know, people will take a minimum wage job. They'll use that to get themselves a little more education, take some classes, build some skills. I mean, you don't have to be an absolute genius to create value for somebody. I mean, even kids can do that. Kids will start lemonade stands or they'll start lawn mowing businesses. I read a story about one kid. I think he was like a 10-year-old or something, and he just basically started a lawn mowing business where he got all his friends involved, and he became pretty successful doing this, where he would take like half the profits and he would start booking appointments for his friends to go mow lawns. So, I mean, if a child can do it, who can't? I've even been thinking about starting a website for my 8-year-old daughter and see if she can start generating some value for other people online. You know, maybe she can draw pictures for them or something and mail it to people. You know, like I'll do a custom 8-year-old drawing for you. You know, I thought that would be kind of a neat thing to try to do on the internet. But I mean, you don't have to be super skilled. You don't have to have major technical skills. I just used kind of what fell into my lap at the time, the skills I already had. Sometimes being too skilled is actually a crutch because it becomes an obstacle because you have so many possibilities to choose from that you're not sure what to do. When you only have a few skills, though, you use what you have.
So, yeah, what about that person who has so many skills that they jump from like one thing to the other to the other to the other? What's happening based on your kind of your model here? What's happening?
Well, usually what's happening is they're asking the wrong questions. They're asking, like, what can I do to get ahead, or what can I do to make money, or what can I do to make more money? And that just traps them. They start going in circles. Instead, focus on doing what you love. I mean, I have lots and lots of interests, too. There's all kinds of things I'll fly off and do for a little while, you know, as hobbies. But then I have to bring myself back, to the question, what do I really want to do? What do I love to do that could be a way of contributing to other people? And that's how you can generate some value from it. And for me, that's the process of personal growth. I had a problem, when I was running my computer games business that I reached the point where I felt I outgrew it. And I thought, well, why should I start another business? Because I'm just going to outgrow that eventually too. And I didn't really want to keep changing businesses every 5 or 10 years just because I got bored with it and outgrew it. So I thought, well, what business could I not outgrow? And the answer was, well, I'd have to make a business about growth itself. So if I make a business about personal growth, then how can I outgrow it? Because, you know, as I grow, then I can feed that back into the business. It becomes, becomes what the business is about. So that was my way of solving that problem of having all these different interests. But, I mean, find a way for those interests to provide value for other people. It's okay, actually, if you have lots of different interests. Just think about, maybe you are attracted to all these things because you love doing just a wide variety of things. Maybe it's not that you're asking the question of how can I make more money and that's what's bouncing you around. Maybe it's that you just do have a lot of different interests that you're passionate about. That's fine too, but then maybe you could find a way to channel that into some kind of outlet that provides value for other people, like sharing those interests with other people or writing about it. I mean, I can use my website to write about diet or productivity tips or spiritual growth or relationships, anything I'm interested in, I can write about that through my website because I didn't create a niche website. I created it around a focus of personal growth.
Yeah, and personal branding too.
What
I like when you talk about money and you talk about this as a business, you talk about value, and I really appreciate the way that you mentioned that because I think a lot of people talk about making money, but you're talking about providing value, which in turn will bring money. How there's a lot of people out there who have these limiting beliefs around money. How can they, because in what I think saddens me the most is there's a limiting belief around money, and the money is, I don't have the money to buy the things that will get me healthy, so they don't buy organic foods, or they don't buy raw foods, they buy, and that to me just like, it throws me off so much. What can they do to kind of clear the beliefs around money to actually allow it to flow through them to actually be able to afford some of the stuff that will be, allow them to take care of their health?
Well, I think we have to, look at what is money. Money is simply a medium of exchanging value. So the more money you have, the more value you've already provided. If you have $1 million, it means society has given you an IOU that says it owes you $1 million of value because you've already provided other people with $1 million of value. So the way I see it is if you don't have money, you're being incredibly selfish with your value. You're hoarding it all to yourself. Some people think that the more money you have, the more selfish you are. I see it just the opposite. Because money, what is money? It's just a number in a bank account, and that number represents social debt. It means that you are owed that much value from other people for what you've already provided, assuming that you've earned it, honestly. And so, you know, that's what I think about. I think about if I don't have money, it means that I'm not really providing that much value for other people. I mean, I could be giving it away for free. That's fine. But if I want to align myself with the sense of abundance and the sense of wealth, then what I want to do is not focus on trying to get money, because that's just getting debt. What I want to focus on instead is giving social value to other people. And there's a difference between personal and intrinsic value and social value. Personal intrinsic value is our innate value as human beings. And we all have a certain value as human beings. Our lives are valuable. But if we want to generate income, we have to provide something beyond that. We have to provide social value, which means something that other people find valuable as well and are willing to exchange their value for in return. So the more you focus on giving and creating and providing value to other people, the more money that comes to you in return. And you kind of reach the point where you don't have to focus on trying to get money. If you just focus on giving and giving and giving value, it comes right back to you. It's like you can't help it. I remember watching a speech by Dr. Wayne Dyer a few years ago, and he says, you know, people have said to me, you know, Dr. Dyer, you have a lot of money, you know, and he said something to the effect of, well, you're right, I do.
Yeah.
He says, but it's not my fault. He says, I can't help it. It just keeps coming to me.
Huh.
He says, I can't help it. And I at the time I heard that speech, which I think was around 2004, I couldn't even relate to what he was saying. I was amused by it. I thought it was humorous, but I couldn't relate to it. And years later, I reached the point where I really understood and felt what he was saying, because I was experiencing it too, where I just focused so much on giving value to other people that new value, money just kept coming in the door. People just would line up to bring me opportunities to make money, and I would hardly have to work for it. It was just easy. I mean, it's like hard for me to even go back to that consciousness of poverty I had before, you know, where my wife and I would debate over whether we could afford Taco Bell for dinner, you know, because it was like, you know, should we take the $8, you know, and spend it on that or save it for something else? And, you know, we were ending each month with less than $100 left in the bank, you know, just squeaking by. And then to, you know, go to the opposite standpoint where now, I don't even really spend hardly any time thinking about my income or my money. It's like not even a focus for me. I don't even know how much money I make each month sometimes. I don't even bother to look at it. I just assume I'll have what I want.
And you even just took down a revenue stream on your website.
Yeah, I mean, I reached the point where I had AdSense, Google AdSense ads. So these are ads that are being served up based on the content of my articles. And I looked at it and I kind of thought, you know, I don't really like what these articles or what these ads are displaying, because some of them were things for like money making schemes and stuff. I just didn't feel like it was a good fit for my content, and I didn't really want it to be on my website. I just felt like I was no longer a match for this kind of stuff, even though I had those ads on my website for years. And this was actually something that happened after I went raw. It's like going raw sometimes, you know, some people say it raises your awareness, and that's what I experienced. It raised my awareness in this area. And even though I was making a good six-figure year income just from those ads, I decided to take it down. And just, you know, I didn't even have an income source to replace it with, and I didn't even care. I just know that, you know, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, I just have the sense that I'll have all the money I need. And I'm making more than I need right now. I'm you know, paying all my bills just fine. You know, don't have any credit card debt or student loans or anything like that. My car is fully paid for. So it was, you know, it wasn't maybe as hard a decision as some people made it out to be, because I've really wrapped myself around this abundance mindset now. So I know for some people, if you're in a scarcity mindset, they're just like appalled at what I did. They're like, how could you do that? You know, maybe you should take the money and give it to charity. And I just thought, no, you know, it's like I don't want to make money in any way that I feel doesn't resonate with me. And if I wanted to if there was something, you know, so strong that I wanted to give to charity, I wouldn't try to make money doing something I didn't believe in and then give the money to charity. Instead, I would just do the work that I felt I would want to donate to anyway. So, I run my business a little bit like a charity. And you mentioned earlier also about buying organic foods. Like, I buy all organic foods. I don't even look at the price tags when I buy stuff. I just assume that there'll be plenty of money there. So I don't have a budget or anything like that. I just always assume there's plenty. Somehow, whenever I look at my bank statements, there's always plenty of money in there. And it seems to keep going up higher.
That's great. Scarcity to abundance. What are the steps?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Scarcity to abundance, the mindset from scarcity to abundance. What are the steps? I mean, is it like a muscle that you need to work out, or is it something that you can, like, turn on tomorrow?
Well, for me, it is something you can turn on tomorrow. It was a mindset, and I actually got this mindset when I was totally broke and I was going bankrupt. This was in 1999. And I got so fed up because for the first 5 years I was running my computer games business, I was focusing on trying to make the business successful and trying to generate income and make money. And it just failed utterly. I sank deeper and deeper into debt, and eventually I accrued $150,000 worth of debt. And even though I thought I could eventually pay it off, my creditors weren't willing to wait. And so everybody was charging off the debts, and it was just becoming a nightmare with all these, you know, debtor phone calls I was getting from creditors and collection agencies. And I didn't really have much of a choice at the time other than to go bankrupt because I had no income. I had no income coming in at all. It was like just a tiny little trickle I was making at the time. And I couldn't even make the minimum payments on this. It was pretty much all credit card debt. And I realized, I just thought, I'm doing something wrong here. There's something wrong about my mindset. You know, I'm smart. I should be able to figure this out. But something about the way I'm trying to generate income is just wrong. It's just obviously not working. And I realized I was just getting too caught up in this idea of making money. I was trying to focus on trying to pull money to me, and I wasn't actually creating anything of value. I was like, how would I even be making money? I haven't even released a game yet. You know, I'm spending all this time working on games, and they were funded by some publishers, but all those deals went wrong. And I thought that's not where my focus has to be, you know, on closing deals and working with publishers and things like that, and meeting deadlines. That's not where my focus needs to be to generate income. Where my focus needs to be is on actually creating value, on contributing, on sharing something with other people. And that's when I got the idea of, you know, I'm going to stop working with other publishers. I'm just going to create a game independently on my own. And I worked with a very small team for people who are willing to work for royalties only. I did a very, very low budget game. I mean, it was just like virtually a $0 budget, just working, you know, just putting in the time on my own to get this game done. And I released it, and the game became a success, and it started generating income. And I was like, wow, how simple that is. You know, just, you have to give something to other people. That's how you generate money. You have to actually give something. You have to put something of value that you created in other people's hands. And that was just like, duh, you know. But it was this amazing realization to me that I had. And after that, I never really had any financial problems again. I never sank into debt again. I never had any credit card debt again after that. It was just my income just kept going up and up and up since then. Even when I started my personal development business, starting from scratch, I had to drop my income because I had to pull out from the games business gradually to do that. So my income went down to about one quarter of what it was before. But it was still enough to meet my needs. And I knew that if I just focused on giving value to other people, I wouldn't have to worry about the money. So I kept that lesson I learned from my games business and applied it to a totally new field. And lo and behold, it worked perfectly again. I mean, it took me a couple of years before I was making a good sustainable income from the website, but not, you know, it wasn't that difficult. It was just about focus. It was just about putting out lots and lots of value for free. And if people liked it, they would come to the website. And if people came to the website and I got a lot of traffic, then there were plenty of ways to make money from that, plenty of ways to monetize it. It's like having an empty warehouse and lots of people are coming through. You can do just about anything to generate income. You know, you can put up billboards and sell advertising. You can sell coffee. You can, sell groceries, whatever. As you know, if you have the people coming to you because they're coming because of the value you're providing, then there's plenty of ways to ask them to provide you some value in return. I've even asked for donations, and that's generated thousands of dollars in income. So
I love that warehouse metaphor. It's like if you have the people coming, you know, ask them and then provide it. It's such a simple process. Now, we've been talking about career, money, and we didn't talk about relationships, but I don't want to talk about it because we don't have that much time left. These all can wear on your health. So where do you think you focus first? It's almost like a chicken and egg thing. Do you focus on your health first, or do you focus on the career, the relationships, and the money?
I like to tell people to start with the physical, actually. In fact, I've even written an article, I think, called Start with the Physical, because I think that's an area that just pays off so well in the long run. If you can get some improvements going in your health, that, I think, is a great place to start. I think that's even more important than starting with your relationships, starting with your finances, your career, because you're going to have this physical body with you for a very long time. And if you start making improvements in your health, they're going to help you in all those other areas, even more so than most of the other changes will. You can have money, but if your health isn't good, you're not going to be able to enjoy it. You're not going to be able to do much with it, and you're not going to be able to earn much money if you can't concentrate, if you can't contribute. I've definitely noticed an improvement in my work and my career path and my finances after I went raw. I've noticed that I can focus better. It's easier for me to write. The writing just flows so easily. Getting ideas, getting inspired is much easier too. In relationships, it's I feel so much more connected with people, even people who aren't raw. It's like I'll just feel this more, the sense of being more heart-centered. Purifying my diet really just opened me up emotionally. It was just a major shift for me this whole year that I've been going through. And getting more clarity about my career path. When I get some of those toxic foods out of my diet, when I got the processed foods out of my diet, I really noticed that I could just think better. I could make better decisions. So I really feel like starting with health is a great place to start. It's a great place to begin your path of personal growth.
And that's really important. I'm glad that you shared that message. So why don't you tell everyone who's listening about the book and how they can find it and what they have in store for them when they do pick it up.
Sure. Well, the book is Personal Development for Smart People. It was just published by Hay House. It just came out in September of this year. And it's doing really well. It has a 4.5-star average rating on Amazon after, like, I think almost 50 reviews. You can get it on Amazon.com. You can find links to it on my website, stevepavlina.com. You should even be able to find it in local bookstores like Borders and Barnes & Noble, and it's gradually becoming available internationally as well. I know it's going to be translated into German by a German publisher next year, and also into Portuguese already, and so it might be coming out in other languages soon too.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I'm sure it's been a labor of love, literally, and it's really amazing to spend the time to interview you. To everyone out there, the website again is stevepavlina.com, stevepavlina.com. I love the book. I've been reading it and doggy-earing the pages, and I was so excited when it came because we get a lot of books delivered to our house, and sometimes it's almost like Christmas every day because we're always getting stuff. But this one, like when I ordered it, I was like, all right, when is it coming? I think I might have even did like one of those like two-day shipping, which I never do. But I think I actually did one of the two-day shipping because I wanted to get it because I was excited because I'd met you and I really wanted to check out this book because I've been reading your stuff too and I was waiting for it. So it's really awesome. So if someone does want to check it out, if you do want to check it out, you're listening right now, go to stevepavlina.com and, read some of the articles, get the book, kind of immerse yourself in what Steve does, and you're really going to come out on top because some of the stuff that he writes is just, it's so dead on, and it's so easy to apply, and I think that's really important. So, Steve, I want to thank you so much for being on this call.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It was my pleasure.
And to everyone else out there, this is Kevin Gianni from RenegadeHealth.com. A little diversion from what we usually do today, but I'm sure that you got some value out of it because I did, and I actually took some notes, and I'm going to be applying some of the things. Maybe I'll do a little 30-day challenge on some of the things that I learned from Steve, and I challenge you all to do the same. So this is Kevin Gianni from RenegadeHealth.com. Take care.